Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Zayin Amud Bet. That's 27b. And we are on the fifth line down in the wide lines. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. So we're at the last section of our Mishnah, which is just on the previous Amud, on Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph. The last section of the Mishnah says, Ein manichin et hamita birchov, that you don't put the funeral bier, the pallet on which they carry the dead body. They would carry the dead body on a sort of a bed and cover it with a sheet. There were no coffins. You don't put that in the rechov on Chol HaMoed. During the intermediate days of the festival, ordinarily they would put it down in the courtyard outside the synagogue, and that's where they would do the eulogies and the birchat avelim, and there were a number of things that were done in that section before burial. So since we're discussing this topic, there are going to be a number of short teachings that we'll do in this recording related to the period of time immediately before the burial and immediately after the burial. That's the topic that we're dealing with now. So the first part that we're talking about is Chol HaMoed. Ordinarily, when it was a weekday, they would put the bier down and they would do the hespedim. But on Chol HaMoed, since it's a festival day, you're not supposed to do eulogies, hespedim. So the custom was not to put it down in the courtyard of the synagogue, but to go directly to the cemetery and bury them. And in fact, the halacha, as it says in the Shulchan Aruch, is that they had to make sure that everything was ready, that the grave was dug and they were ready to bury them so that there was no delay. However, there is an exception here, and that's what we begin our Gemara with, five lines down in the wide lines. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, Ein Moed Bifnei Talmid Chacham. There is no Chol HaMoed related to a Torah scholar, which means all of the regular procedures for burial, even though it's Chol HaMoed, and ordinarily you wouldn't do eulogies, for a Torah scholar, you do put the funeral bier down in the square, and you do eulogies. So the case in our Mishnah where it says that you don't do it, it specifically says there not to do it, Shalola Hargil et HaHesped. Not to get accustomed to doing the hesped, because in most circumstances you didn't do a hesped, but as Rav Papa said, in the case of a Talmud Chacham, you would. And then he adds in, V'kol shekein Chanukah Upurim. And of course, on Chanukah and Purim, which are also festive days, you also would do a eulogy for a Talmud Chacham. Now, the order of events there is that Chol HaMoed is more serious because there is an Isur Malacha. As we know, you're not really supposed to do work on Chol HaMoed unless it is a specific set of exemptions, which we dealt with extensively in the first chapter of Moed Katan. And so one of the things that you're not supposed to do is public displays of mourning. On the other hand, Chanukah and Purim, although there was a discussion, as we saw in Megillah, as to originally there was some discussion about making Purim into a holiday in which you couldn't do malacha, the consensus and custom is that on Hanukkah and Purim you are allowed to do malacha, and therefore it is a lower level. And of course, if you can eulogize on Chol HaMoed, then you can eulogize on Hanukkah and Purim as well. In the Shulchan Aruch, he adds one other somewhat festive day, which is even on a lower level than Hanukkah and Purim, which is Rosh Chodesh. So on all of those occasions, we don't eulogize other people, but we will for a Talmid Chacham. In addition, there is some dispute as to what elements of mourning are done on those holidays. Generally speaking, we do have mourning. It was a dispute among the poskim, but generally speaking, we do allow mourning to occur, or we require mourning to occur on Chanukah and Purim, but certainly public mourning is not done on Chol HaMoed. Okay, so Rav Papa now limits his statement. Vahane mile, these words, in other words, that you put the bier down in the square and eulogize the Talmud Chacham, bifanav, is only if the body is there. Aval shelo bifanav, but if the body is not there, lo, then you do not eulogize him. So it's only at the actual levaya. Ini, is this true? V'ha Rav Kahana, we have a story, a teaching, that Rav Kahana safdei l'Rav Zvid, he made a eulogy for Rav Zvid, min Naharda. Now Rav Zvid lived in Naharda and was buried in Naharda, but the eulogy was done bepum Nahara, in a different city, which was a distance away. So obviously he wasn't there in front of him. Amar Rav Papi, so Rav Papi explains why Rav Kahana did this. Yom Shemua Hava. It was the day in which he heard about the death, and presumably it was Chol HaMoed. Ukibifan of Dame. Since it was the day on which he heard about it, and I assume that he also means it was the day on which Rav Kahana was being buried, it was as if he was there. And therefore he was allowed to do a hesped, even though he wasn't present with him. There is a question, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that we do in fact do eulogies for a Talmid Chacham, for a Torah scholar, on Chol HaMoed. However, in the Halachos of Chol HaMoed, which is Or HaChaim, I have it here. No, I didn't write it down. I think it's Or HaChaim. Oh, Tav Kuf Mem Zayin, that's 547, the 547th section of Or HaChaim. In the Biur Halacha, which is one of the, the Mishnah Berurah wrote a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and occasionally when he wanted to go into deeper depth into one topic, he wrote another section of the commentary called Biur Halacha, where he goes into, where he takes a deep dive into a few sections. So on that section, he mentions in passing at the end that it is our custom nowadays to be machmir, to be stringent, and we do not do eulogies for Talmidei Chachamim on Chol HaMoed. And there are some other times when you're not supposed to do Hespedim as well, such as Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontif, because you have to get ready for the holiday. So there are other times like this, and the question is, what are the possible leniencies? Because generally speaking, people want to do eulogies. It helps them feel comforted. So either can you do them for Talmidei Chachamim, or can you even do them for other people as long as, let's say, you keep it very short or it's not a real full hesped. People try to find leniencies for those things, but the general halacha is that we do not. Okay, continuing on. Amar Ula. So Ula makes a side comment about the word hesped, because we were talking about hesped, which means a eulogy. And what Ula says is the original meaning of hesped is not eulogy. He says, hesped alev. The original meaning of hesped is to beat one's chest over one's heart. Kind of similar to the way we do alchetz, but maybe even with more violence, that a mourner would beat their chest. Dichtiv, as it is written in Yeshayahu chapter 32, verse 12, Lamed Bet Yud Bet, it says, Al Shadayim Sofdim, that the women, Yeshayahu is making a prophecy here to these women who are living a very comfortable life. He says, in a year from now, you're not going to be living a comfortable life. You're going to be mourning over everything that you've lost. And one of the things he says they're going to do is, Al Shadayim Sofdim, you will beat your breasts. So that is not referring to any kind of oral saying or a eulogy. It's referring to an actual beating upon one's chest. And, so that's the original meaning. How it got from being beating one's chest to being a eulogy, I'm not exactly sure, but I'll say one other thing about it in a second. So he goes on and says, there's another word that they use for mourning called tipuach. Tipuach, he says, is biyad. That is, and most commentaries say tipuach means that they would clap their hands. Now, sometimes we clap our hands to show appreciation or celebration. Often we think of clapping one's hands in our cultural context as a happy thing. But they would clap their hands as part of a mourning ritual to make noise. The noise of the clapping hands was a way of expressing their mourning. And then in addition, kilus baregel, there was something called kilus, which meant stamping one's feet on the ground. So both of these, all of these, were actions that created a certain amount of noise. The word kilus is an unusual word. In and of itself, it has two meanings which are opposites from each other. Lekales can sometimes mean to praise, which is what we say, certainly in Nusach Sfar, we say la'aleu lekales, to praise Hashem. But it can also mean to curse or to insult. As in the example in Melachim Bet, when the little boys come out and taunt and curse Elisha, it says mekalsimoto, that they curse him. But both of these are oral, sound. So it could be that the idea of stamping one's foot on the ground has to do with making the noise, that the noise of everyone stomping on the ground was part of the aesthetic of the funeral experience. So I'll just say one other thing about this. There is a pasuk which Rabbeinu Hananel points us to in Yechezkel chapter 6, verse 11, where he describes the mourning process, and he says it in a slightly different way. First he says, Hakeh b'chapcha, hit your palms. So that is the same as tipuach, but he doesn't use the word tipuach, but he does talk about clapping one's hands together. And then he says, Urika b'raglecha, stomp with your feet. So he doesn't use the word kilus, but the same idea of stomping with your feet. And then the third thing he says is the omer ha'ach, and you'll say out loud ha'ach, which is like a sound of groaning or mourning. So to me, that third sound goes back to hesped and is the idea that you would speak out your grief when you are mourning. Now, possibly ha'ach is like more like a groan that doesn't have words, but it seems to me to correspond to the idea of hesped. One other interesting note here, I said I wouldn't do that, but there's one other interesting note, which is there is a discussion about whether or not you can clap your hands on Chol HaMoed, and one of the suggestions, or the Tosfos brings two suggestions for how it might be done. One is to clap with one hand, which sounds like a Zen parable, because how do you clap with one hand? But it could be, he suggests perhaps it means to use one hand to clap on your thighs instead of clapping your hands together, which makes less noise. But it also could be a source for the custom that some people have not to clap on Shabbos, which is a separate problem that that many people are not so makpid on, but some people are, that they clap, instead of clapping palms together, they clap their palm against the back of their hand is a way of not of clapping in an unusual way. The other way Tosfos suggests is that you would use both hands to clap, but not together. You'd clap them on your thighs, which is a similar idea. Okay, one other teaching about kilus, which is stamping one's foot. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, hamakales, one who stamps their foot, lo yikales besandal, they should not stamp wearing sandals, ela bimin al, but wearing proper shoes, mipnei sakana, because of the danger that you'll hurt yourself. There seems to be some issues with the girsa here. The Rashi in the Kitvei Yad flips the girsa. He says, you should not stomp on a min'al, because a min'al has a soft leather sole, but rather with a sandal, which has a wooden sole. So I think there may be some confusion about what is a sandal and what's a min'al, but the basic principle is that you should use a shoe in which you will not hurt yourself. Rabbeinu Hananel has a different girsa where he says you should not use a sandal or a min'al, but Rashi says, well, then what are you supposed to stamp with? Barefoot? If you're barefoot, you're more likely to hurt yourself. But in any case, we don't do any of these things anymore. The only thing that we still do in our common practice is eulogies. Clapping and stomping are not things that we do currently, as far as I know, in funerals. And even the other things that it talks about doing in funerals, which is discussed in the same siman in Shulchan Aruch, which is women's wailing, and there were three different kinds of wailing. There was a wailing where they all wail together, and there was a wailing where one of the women would say something mournful and all the other women would respond, me'onanot and makonanot, which we've discussed at other things, are generally things that we don't do, although there are still some Jewish cultures, some of the Sephardic cultures that have some of that they still do, both in mourning and at weddings. Okay, continuing on. Very verbose today. I hope that you will forgive me. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Avel, a mourner, kevan shenianea rosho, once he moves his head or nods his head, shuv ein menachamim rasha'im leshev etzlo. From that point on, the comforters are not permitted to sit with him. When the mourner nods his head, according to one reading of it, it shows that he has received the comfort and he is comforted. Once he is comforted, he no longer needs comforters to continue to comfort him, and therefore they should leave him alone. He showed that he's received his comfort, or he's comforted himself, and it's time to go. That's one possibility. I think the simpler reading of it is the way that it's paskened in Shulchan Aruch, which is that the mourner is not supposed to greet people when they first come to the house of Shiva, and he's not supposed to dismiss them verbally. So since he isn't allowed to welcome them or dismiss them, he has to nod his head as a way to show that he's ready for his comforters to give him some peace and quiet, and they're supposed to know when to leave. It's a little bit subtle, and we don't really do it that way. What we do is we tell the comforters that when you come, you should not stay overly long. You should, you know, take some cues to know that you should be there for a short period of time, and then you should leave. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan said, "Hakol chayavin la'amod mipnei nasi." This is a slightly different topic. Everyone is required to stand up when the nasi comes into the room. Chutz me'ava v'chola, except not a mourner and not a sick person. Neither one of them is forbidden to rise. They are just not required to rise. So the chola may be unable to rise or may not feel well enough, and the avel is not required either, but may if they choose to. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan, "Lakol omrim lahem shvu." So then you're supposed to actually remain standing. You know, the way we do it often now when a Rosh Hashiva walks in or comes up to speak, you know, or comes into the class, we rise up for a second and we sit back down. But here, the halacha was that they had to remain standing until the master of ceremonies or the nasi said, shvu, that you can all sit down. Chutz me'avo v'chola, and the avo and the chola also don't have to do that. Because, first of all, they didn't have to get up in the first place, and even if they did rise for the nasi, they can choose to sit on their own time. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Avel Yom Rishon Asur Le'achol Lecha Mishalo. And Avel, the first day, that is the day of burial and the first day of Shiva, is forbidden to eat his own food. This is what we call the Sudas Havra. We've talked about it before. When you come back from the burial, the first meal that they eat, which we usually is, we accustom us to eat eggs, eggs and bread, simple meal, is supposed to be provided by the neighbors of the mourner to him. And there's actually an isor for him to eat his own food. And this comes, as many of our mourning customs do, from the book of Yechezkel. Midu amar le rachmana li Yechezkel, because of what the merciful one said to Yechezkel. That word rachmana in Aramaic means the merciful one. In Hebrew, it's harachaman. So the word harachaman means the merciful one. Sometimes the word is used in the Talmud to refer to the Torah, like when the Torah says something, it's rachmana. But it really means the author of the Torah, who is the merciful one. Okay, so the rachmana said to Yechezkel, the merciful one said to Yechezkel, v'lechem anashim lo tochel, the bread of people you shall not eat. Now, that could be interpreted as saying that the avel is supposed to fast, but that's not how we understand it. We understand it as his own food he shouldn't eat. He shouldn't eat a regular meal, but his neighbor should provide it for him. And part of that is to begin the process of the comforting of the community coming to take care of the mourner. And this is still in effect. People do it slightly differently now. Now they order platters, the whole Shiva, and many, many mourners have like an abundance of food that is collected in their homes because people are sending it to them. But it's a positive community development. There is a question, if he doesn't have neighbors or friends and no one gives him a meal, is he then able to eat his own food if he doesn't have any other choice? Or should he fast? And we could ask a different question, is he allowed to fast? So we saw earlier when we looked at the mourning that was done by David for Shaul and Yonatan, that they fasted. And we said there, it's not required, it was an extra chumrah. So based on that, some people will learn that if the mourner doesn't want to eat, and sometimes mourners don't want to, that they are permitted to fast, but it is not required to fast. However, for us, we have a very strong minhag of having the Sudas Havra, and they should eat at least a little bit so that they're not fasting. Okay, next. Rabba v'Rav Yosef, mechalfi su'udataihu lahadadeh. What Rabba and Rav Yosef did is they switched sudas with each other, meaning each one of them was a mourner, and Rabba gave his food to Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef gives his food to Rabba, and that worked. This seems to be something that Rabba did. We saw in Megillah that Rabba and Rav Yosef also used to switch meals on Purim. They would switch sudas from year to year, or they would each provide food. So it was an arrangement. V'amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, says in the name of Rav, Mate Ba'ir, if someone dies in a certain city. Now, it says the word city, but we must be referring to a relatively small village, because what it says is, Kol b'nei ha'ir asurin ba'asiyat melacha. All the people of the city are forbidden to do any malacha from the time that person dies until they're buried. In other words, it is a communal responsibility to make sure that that person becomes buried. Now, if this was something that happened every day, it would be a tremendous interruption of life, And if there were many, many people that were being interrupted from work, it would be a tremendous interruption. So we must be speaking about relatively small context. Okay, Rav Hamnuna ikla le Daromta. Rav Hamnuna went to a certain town called Daromta, which maybe was in the south. Shama kol shipura de shichva. And he heard a public call on the loudspeaker, so to speak, or someone announced that someone had passed away. De shichva means that they had passed away. Chaza, he looked, hinach inche, and he saw there were men, de ka'avdi avita, that continued to do their work. They didn't stop doing malacha, even though, as we just saw, they were required to. So he got angry about this. Amar lo, he said to them, lehavu hinach inche bishamta. He spoke to them in the third person, and he basically put them into, he excommunicated them. He said, you're not following the law of the town that you should not do any work when someone needs to be buried, and so I'm putting you in excommunication. You think you're going to do your work, instead you're going to be excommunicated. So, and then he said to them, incredulously, Lo shechva ika b'mata? Isn't there a dead person in town? How could you just be continuing to go about your business as usual instead of taking care of the dead person? Amrulay, so they said back to him, Chavurata ika b'mata. They said, there is a chabura here in town that takes care of this. So this seems to be an original source for the idea of the chevra kadisha, that there was such a chevra, there was a group of people that took care of the dead, of burying the dead. Amar luhu, so he said to them, ihachi sharya luhu. He goes, oh, okay, if that's true, then you're permitted to do your work. Or some people say, I am revoking my excommunication, everything's fine. So there's some dispute in the Rishonim as to how this works. The way the Rashi says it in the Kitvei Yad is that in a large town, there were different groups of people who took care of burials, and you belong to one of the groups. And he says actually specifically that each group had its own Beit Knesset, its own synagogue. So it's kind of interesting. That sounds very much like our situation, where every synagogue has its own chevra kadisha, or its own burial, committee, or avelut committee, and they take care of it. And because of that, the other people in town, or the members of other synagogues, do not have responsibility for that particular dead person who belonged to this chevra. The other thing is that if you're in a particular synagogue community and there is a chevra kadisha, so that would also mean that all the other members of the synagogue don't have to worry about it. Only the members of the chevra kadisha would not be allowed to do malacha until they made arrangements for the burial. We're going to stop there and have a wonderful day.